You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with security experts Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs. In this episode of the podcast, we'll be talking about remote access tools and how they can be used in a cyber attack. To kick us off, can you tell our listeners why we're talking about remote access tools today?
So one of the more interesting things that have happened in the last month, of which we've had a lot to pick from, by the way, has been the recent attack against a water plant in Florida. And I say attack because it was a hack, which was interesting because what we had here was an example of potentially smart SCADA gone wrong, but a safety mechanism from traditionally one of the most unlikely places. So what happened is a hacker had gained remote access into one of the systems controlling the water supply at a Florida water purification plant. Now, what was interesting was that this attack appeared to leverage, in some capacity, TeamViewer. TeamViewer is a remote access tool used often by a lot of IT organizations and teams to access a system when individuals are having problems with it. So it's similar to any other kind of remote tool that other organizations may use or that you may have seen at the office. So it's great. These tools are great because when you have issues with your computer and it's just not working over the phone when the IT professional is trying to speak with you, they can then just log in directly and take control of your system and make a few changes, often taking what would be like a 50-minute phone call, sometimes down to like 5 or 10-minute experience at the most. And there are a couple different unique elements to this because, one, that was installed on a very important critical resource infrastructure system there, right? Additionally, what was interesting about that was that the mechanism that actually protected everyone was something that everyone usually blames for an attack in the first place, and that's someone on site. So what happened was the hack occurred, and a technician actually stopped it as it was occurring. The technician came in earlier that morning and saw, hey, my mouse is moving, but I haven't done anything. And they assumed that in this instance, someone from work had logged in through TeamViewer and was working on a few things. Now, fast forward a little bit later in the day, the mouse is still moving and the mouse is starting to make some adjustments that are a little concerning. So they watched as the remote hacker had actually used TeamViewer to then go over to the system that controlled, I forget the actual name of the chemical, but it was lye. Lye is used to a very minimal extent in water purification to help clean it out, similar to how fluoride is in a lot of water here in the United States to help our teeth. So what had happened was they put in well over 100 times the recommendation, I think it was even over 1,000 times recommended dosage of lye into the water system, which had it gotten to people, it could cause burning, it could cause irritation, and if people had drank it, it could really cause serious internal issues. Now, what's interesting is that the individual saw it, caught it, and then changed back the appropriate dosage immediately. And furthermore, when it came out, the leadership of this actual purification plant said, don't worry, there was at least 24 to 48 hours before that water ever would have made it to anybody, and we have other mechanisms in place to catch it. But what was interesting was you started to see, and Dustin and I have talked about this a couple times, where smart SCADA goes wrong. And for those of you who want a quick primer on SCADA and smart SCADA, SCADA is supervisory control and data acquisition. Think of things like transportation networks, and in this case, water networks and so forth, and nuclear energy networks. These are all types of systems that have very niche purposes, but are very important parts of the infrastructure, right? You have, I like to use Chernobyl as an example, but that's a terrible example because it didn't end well for anyone. If you've seen Chernobyl, the show, they're in that big room with all the buttons and knobs and so forth. That's usually what these places look like, you know, starting in the 50s and 60s or 40s, probably in a lot of instances, because they would have to control vast, big networks that were very, very, very niche. Fast forward to the last 20-ish years, and the people who own these systems go, hey, I don't want to have to leave the house, or I need to be able to do this remotely, or something along those lines. Now you're connecting systems that were built in a very niche, specific way, right? Some of which haven't been updated in over 30 years. You're connecting them to the internet. Oh, boy. Right? This is a security nightmare because you have things that are way out of date. You have systems that are way out of date using languages that are hard to fix in case there's any issue there. I mean, who knows COBOL anymore? We learned that in the last year here in the States with unemployment infrastructure. These are very, very
big targets for potential malicious actors. And what you had here is one of those nightmare scenarios come to life because TeamViewer. So, and I'm going to take a step back too, and I want your thoughts on this too, Dustin. Just because TeamViewer was used doesn't mean that TeamViewer was the application that was exploited in this instance. Wouldn't you say it's a safe assessment?
Right. Yeah. And I wouldn't even necessarily say it was exploited. I think it was just utilized by a hacker. Some of us have been forced to shift from being in-office workers to being remote workers, right? Some of these things have saved us. Some of these remote controls and capabilities have actually saved jobs, have actually saved, made working conditions more safe during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, with that, of course, every time you open anything up to the internet, it's open up to the internet. It's out there. I was talking to a buddy recently, and he was talking about how he wanted to get into cybersecurity, and there was a cybersecurity program specifically related to global cybersecurity threats. And I kind of laughed and I was like, wait, aren't all cybersecurity threats technically global? Right? And there are some nuances to that, of course. There are some closed off networks and everything. But if you have something that has remote access, that has a public IP address that can be accessed from your home, it's on the internet. It's global. It's something that's there. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is, of course, the SCADA part of it, which is scary, right? It's scary, but it's necessary. It's one of those things that in order for us to continue moving ahead as a technological society, for us to move forward and evolve, we kind of have to start putting our trust into these things. So, of course, then it's where do the twains meet, right? So, like, where do we have cybersecurity meeting technological innovation? And how much do we trust these things? SCADA has been around for decades now, right? It's been a long time. It's been around. And of course, now we're moving more towards industrial IoT in that space, right? So now not only are we allowing workers to remote in and change different things in mechanical processes and in chemical processes, but now we're actually going to start trusting the cloud to host some of the data and AI to make some of those minuscule adjustments as well with industrial IoT. So it's not going backwards. We're not going to stop remote access. We're actually, if anything, we're getting deeper and deeper into the ecosystem that we've all built around ourselves, the technological ecosystem that we all built around ourselves.
And I think you make a good point there. Like, it's not going to go away. It's the natural evolution of where things are heading, especially when you see greater and greater cloud adoption. Now, that said, certain elements of cloud adoption are not there yet. You and I have had our recent experiences with Google Stadia, which have been nothing but agony for me. But as things are getting more adopted into the cloud, and we're seeing this bigger, no ownership, but more rental of space kind of thing, and putting off our computing from one point to another, you're also seeing access. I don't want to say everything's turning into a dumb terminal, because that would just lead me to an afternoon of depression, right? Are we humans but dumb terminals then? But I think that we're seeing this, and SCADA has consistently, at least as long as I've been working with it in some capacity since like 2005-06, has been at least 10 years behind. And that is the big concern, right? I mean, first of all, cybersecurity is always a game of catch up. But like when you're talking about bringing OT into things too, I mean, you're really talking about super catch up, right? I mean, it's stressful because you see a lot of the solutions are adding smart terminals into dumb systems and dumb networks, viewing that, well, this has a completely good firewall and stuff like that built into it, so we should be safe. But yeah, people are getting past those firewalls all the time. And it gets into another part we discuss a lot, Dustin. And unless you have some kind of defense in depth mechanism there, once they're in, they're in. A perimeter only is not going to be good. Having, oh, don't worry, I only have one access point, right? And we're good. Well, what do you want me to say? Look at the, what was it, the Flame one at the Saudi Aramco in 2011 and so forth. That was a riff off of the Stuxnet. I mean, these were systems that I would be surprised if they were connected to the internet at all. But there we have them, right? It's definitely something that needs a lot more consideration, but I don't think gets enough due to the fact that it's always, always, always playing catch up.
Right. And we've seen, you know, you mentioned Stuxnet and some other ones as well. We've seen that those systems don't necessarily even need to be connected to the internet, right? The way that some of these pieces of malware propagate is via USB drive or via peripheral of some kind, right? So you don't even need access, and you don't even need physical access. You just need to get to somebody who does have physical access. So there's that kind of interesting part of it. Then there's a secondary part where I think the case in Florida really kind of drives a lot of things home. we've run different scenarios within the Department of Energy, within the Department of Defense, that, you know, okay, if somebody hacked into blank system, what would be the outcome? And, you know, we've kind of been able to scare people like, oh, they can shut your power off. They can cause pipes to flood and places to flood. And don't get me wrong, those can be dangerous things. And of course, you know, there's the super catastrophic, like if someone gets a hold of a nuclear power generator and somehow is able to turn off certain protections.
That's so just that Russell movie right there, buddy.
Yeah. But we've had this kind of threat of life-threatening capabilities via hacking. This one in Florida really drives home, I don't think necessarily how easy it is, but how quickly that could have gone wrong. You definitely pulled your punches at the beginning of this when you said, you know, oh yeah, it could cause internal damage to somebody, you know, to a human being. It could kill somebody, right? But I think that at the scale for what they could have done, right, they could have poisoned an entire town or entire county, right, in Florida. So I think this really drives it home. You know, if it hasn't gotten the attention of the workers at these facilities, it should. They're very hard workers. We all put our trust in them every day to make sure that our water's clean and other facilities are working properly as well. And now we're also asking them to make sure that they're cyber secure and they're following in that cultural vein.
And I still have to say, I really am happy that it was an individual technician at the plant that noticed it, because I feel like, and I don't know how you feel about this, Dustin, but I feel like especially over the last at least 5 years, everyone's been in the spotlight saying that, oh, it was Bill or Jim or Chip at the company who just wasn't paying attention or didn't do something the right way. Oh man, what was it? The worst throwing under the bus, I felt like, was that one guy at Experian, right? Or was it Equifax? That was like, they were like, yeah, no, it was this one guy who didn't put the patch down this one time. Like, really? We're not taking group responsibility here, but okay. And now it was nice to see how it was like, yeah, this could have gone really, really wrong if this person had not identified it and took action. Which was really encouraging in this day and age where everything is always the end user's problem and definitely the lowest person on the chain's problem. It was encouraging to see.
Absolutely. And you're right. You know, we do see that. Like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, too, where it's like everybody wants to pin the blame on somebody. Like it's a blame game where honestly, and don't get me wrong, there's definitely a responsibility involved for sure. But honestly, one of the negative effects of doing the blame game is the next time something like this happens, people are going to try to hush it. And then other people don't know if they're also vulnerable. There may have been somebody in another county somewhere else, not even in Florida, but maybe, you know, in another state who heard about this and was like, oh, man, we use TeamViewer, too. We should lock down that stuff because it controls the same system or it controls an even more dangerous system. And I think that's something that the cybersecurity community has been working on for a really long time, is being open with these hacks, right? And these incidents is the better terminology to use for this. But we're trying to get more open with that. And we're trying to share more things. Also with that, the SolarWinds exploit, we know that it was probably at least one server, right, that was either left open or was somehow somebody gained access to it. But, you know, the details of that one haven't quite been released all the way yet. So that kind of started the attack. That's kind of how the SolarWinds one started. So, but understanding that and getting that idea of, yeah, I'm just an IT guy, or yeah, I'm just a worker here, but I do have these accesses that could cause major problems if they fall into the wrong hands. Again, that's the basics, the basic building blocks of building a culture of cybersecurity within your company, is making sure people understand that. And I think with hacks like this that happen, or events like this that happen, incidents like this that happen, where you can point to it and say, this is why it's important for you to practice cyber hygiene. It's overall a good thing. It's a terrible thing that it happened to begin with, but it's overall a good thing, I think, for the community in general.
And also, when you make sure that they're cyber savvy, everybody at the office, you can't expect to just throw a policy in front of them that is legalese. And I mean, Dustin and I have written policies for a living. They're boring. We don't even like to read them. We don't even like to read them after we've written them. And I wrote one the other day and I was like, oh, I've got to edit it. I don't want to read that. Just wrote it and I didn't like it. I mean, they're important documents, but they're very boring documents 9 times out of 10. And for those of us who are in the field of cybersecurity, who already know that and even put a lot of effort in it, and if we don't want to read it, imagine the individuals who are in your organization who aren't in the field and really are just there to work, right? My grandfather has a saying, like, what do a lot of people try to do? They're just trying to make it from one end of the day to the other, right? And in a lot of instances, if that means I've got to read this really boring policy, I'm sure they'll give it their best. I say all this just to say that making sure they understand these cybersecurity concerns means that training has to be engaging and impactful, meaningful, not just a boring policy thrown in front of them, or even worse, those
webinars, right, where they can just click, 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 and then maybe try to guess a few answers at the end and have unlimited guesses at trying to get the security question right. I mean, if they're doing that and you have that, you're already going to be suffering, right? So it's a two-way responsibility there to make sure that things like this are implemented.
And the training is the hardest thing to do. We all have the know before. No, we don't all have the know before, but some of us use something like know before. Wow. Where
I hear what you did there. That's a good pun.
Okay. So we all have the training that we have to do, right? And like Frank said, you can click through it all you want. I don't think it's, I'm not going to say specifically a company's isn't good, but it's not great training because it doesn't make things stick. And I understand that for a large corporation, what are you going to do? Like, you can't hold individual trainings. That's way too much money. That's way too much time. It's really hard to do. I think roundtables and discussions on things like risks and on things like cybersecurity, though, can really help hit home some of these points that cybersecurity is really trying to make. And not only that, but it helps people remember it a little bit better and helps people stick to it a little bit better. The hacking stuff, everybody is always wowed by hacks that happen, right? They're like, oh, that's so cool. You know, we have movies about it in our culture. We did a whole episode on movies, right? Where we talked about hackers and we talked about sneakers and, you know, all the kind of pop culture stuff. And it's never like that, right? You know, in real life, it's never quite that glamorous, if you will. But that kind of stuff is something that catches people's attention because it's neat. It's cool that those kinds of things exist and that there's people out there who are as nefarious as they may be are really smart, are doing those things. And I think that's something that really drives it home. And I think those kinds of examples are really, really good thing to show a group of people to say, hey, this is what can happen. This is what they can get access to if A happens, if B happens, if C happens.
So not to fixate too much on this one instance in Florida, because I think it's important to look at the root causes and how it can maybe be stopped from happening like you guys have done here. But you're right in that it is kind of like a movie. I mean, that's super jarring to think that that could happen. Maybe not on this scale necessarily, but are these kind of resource attacks common, or do we really see anything like this on the regular?
No one's going to like this one. Yes, we do, as a matter of fact, see these types of attacks happen on a regular, everyday occurrence. And it's the most frustrating one way possible because it's the scammers that are based. I think two big hotbeds are out in the Caribbean. Oh, what's the big Caribbean hotbed for scammers, Dustin? Do you remember? It's one of the islands. I don't know which one. I do know which one. I just don't want to say the wrong one off the top of my head. And there's a huge industry of it out of Israel, too, where they are the ones who are calling up, usually the elderly and other individuals, and then asking them, saying, hey, oh man, you have a serious problem with your bank account, or you have a serious problem with your computer. And then they'll have the victim go online, and one of the first things they'll do is install TeamViewer. And then they will use TeamViewer to fix the problem with their bank or with their computer and so forth from there. And it is really upsetting. So, like, yes, as a matter of fact, this is probably one of the more regular types of attacks. TeamViewer is used in this remote fashion, a lot of attacks, just in the most unsettling way, because you're taking advantage of those who are usually just trying to get something fixed or just trying to resolve a problem that is not even an issue, that is just being sold to them fake.
Absolutely. So actually, this brings up one of my favorite Twitch accounts that I like to watch. This person's also on YouTube. It's a guy named Kit Boga. And what Kit Boga will do, and it's actually really interesting for cybersecurity experts to watch it because he does some cybersecurity stuff on this too. Kit Boga will put a voice modulator on and he'll actually call these scammers back and he'll mess with them. He's a comedian, basically. He's like an improv comedian who does this. He changes his voice to sound like an elderly person. He'll change his voice to different accents that he puts on. And he tries to basically scam the scammer and basically tries to waste their time. Now, again, like Frank says, the first thing that most of them try to do is have the victim install TeamViewer. So, of course, he has to go on and install TeamViewer. He does some really interesting cybersecurity tricks, like changing some things in the host file so it looks like he's installing TeamViewer when actually he's installing something else, or that they can't get to TeamViewer. And so it really frustrates the scammer on the other end of the phone. And he goes in and edits his registry to erase everything that happened, or, you know, so he can move on to the next scammer. Really, really funny guy to watch, really interesting to watch from a cybersecurity perspective and see all the things that this comedian, and I don't know if he might have a computer background as well, but is able to do just by messing around with these scammers and all these different cyber techniques that he's able to mitigate now just personally. And if you watch him for a little bit, you'll actually be able to mitigate them as well, and you'll be able to identify them as scammers. Really, really cool stuff that happens there. I also think there's a lot of stuff, Abby, back to your point, a lot of stuff that happens that we don't know about. We heard about this thing in Florida. I don't know why. I don't know what kind of reporting they have or whether it was leaked, like how it kind of came to light. But I do believe this happens on a much larger scale than we even know. We just usually don't find out about it. It might be an internal matter that they handle internally. And again, this goes back to us not keeping secrets from each other in the cyber community and making sure that we report things properly and that the authorities are involved if needed. I'm pretty sure that might have been how this one got out, because I'm pretty sure they had to tell the FBI, depending on where the packets were coming from, they had to tell somebody, you know, if across state lines, if across county lines, they had to alert the proper authorities. That being said, because they're caught or mitigated before they actually get to the point they were kind of at this other place. So don't be scared to drink your water. I live in Florida. I'm drinking the water right now. It's delicious.
Thanks, Dustin. And thank you, Frank. That's all the time we have on this episode of the Cyber Pros Exchange series. But to make sure you never miss an episode of the podcast, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.